Welcome to Anthony Plogue on Music. I'm Tony Plogue, and today's guest is the Seraph Brass. Seraph Brass is a group of 5 to 6 women whose mission is, quote, elevating and showcasing the excellence of female brass players and highlighting musicians from marginalized groups both in personnel and programming, unquote. Their story is inspirational and can serve as a guide for young women and men who aspire to a career in music. The members of the Seraph Brass are women who have strong and interesting careers in addition to being members of the group. So we first talk about their individual careers and then talk about how the group has formed and has grown over the years. This podcast is brought to you by Dorico, the music notation and composition software from Steinberg.
Create music that moves with Dorico 5, the brand new version of the music notation and composition software from Steinberg. Packed with new features throughout the application, it's the perfect time to update from your current version or to try Dorico for the first time. You can start for free with Dorico SE or Dorico for iPad, which now allow projects with up to 8 players, or step up to Dorico Elements, which now allows projects of unlimited size and features an expanded engrave mode. For professional use, choose Dorico Pro, which has many unique features you won't find in any other software. Visit www.steinberg.net/Dorico today and make more time for music.
So Seraph Brass, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
I'd like to start with each of you introducing yourselves. We'll start maybe with the trumpets, work our way through horn, trombone, and tuba, and tell me what you do outside of the group, professional engagements you have outside of the group or teaching, and why you join the group. So, Mary, if you want to start.
Sure. Hi, I'm Mary Elizabeth Bowden, the founder of Seraph Brass. I primarily work as a trumpet soloist, commissioning new concertos for trumpet and orchestra. And I also play in a duo with my husband, trumpeter David Dash. And I do some orchestral work too. And I love chamber music projects. I'm very nomadic. And I'm also the full-time professor of trumpets at Shenandoah Conservatory in Virginia.
Great. Rachel?
Hello, my name is Rachel Samayoa. And outside of Seraph Brass, I teach trumpet at the University of North Texas, where I also co-direct the brass band there. I play frequently in the area of the DFW area, principal trumpet at Richardson Symphony Orchestra. And I also play with a mariachi group there as well. Mm-hmm. And I also have a faculty trio called Antenna Trio that we just released an album. And I think that's pretty much all about me.
Okay. And I met you actually, the first time I met you was when you were teaching at Eastern Kentucky University, I believe. And you had really changed the mentality of at least the trumpet studio there, that it became much more positive and energetic. So you're a great teacher.
Appreciate that. Thank
you. I can testify to that. So we have another Rachel in the group.
Yeah, I'm the second Rachel. and I live in Illinois now. I'm from Wisconsin. But I lived in Richmond, Virginia for about 12 years, where I was playing with the symphonies and Williamsburg Symphony and Virginia Symphony. And I was the first call player for the Virginia Repertory Orchestra, doing a lot of pit work. And let's see, now I have a studio of 5 little baby students. They're so cute. I love them so much. And I just got into a group called the Isthmus Brass, and we do a lot of like jazzy things as well as, you know, classical stuff. So I've been getting out my improv chops lately, and it's been a lot of fun.
Wow. Great. Victoria.
All right, guys, I'm Vicky Garcia. I live in Boston. When I'm not on tour with these awesome ladies, I am an active and aggressive freelancer in the Boston scene. I primarily do a lot of my subbing with the Boston Symphony Orchestra and the Boston Pops. I have been very fortunate enough to also have subbed with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And when I'm not doing awesome things like playing with those people, I am also a certified Alexander Technique teacher. So I have a very awesome studio of very talented musicians that are studying at New England Conservatory or other conservatories in Boston. And I'm very proud to say that my students are winning jobs by studying the Alexander Technique. So I'm very happy to be a part of that experience.
That's great. And one quick question just for me. You played, of course, with Boston and Philadelphia. Playing in those orchestras, is it really different, or are they very similar in the way they play?
what makes it different is the people I'm sitting next to. So I've had a lot of opportunities to play with next to Steve Lang, Jim Markey, Mike Roylands, and Toby Oft. And I've played with them so frequently over the years that I know their styles of playing well. So when I joined Philadelphia, well, not joined, when I got an opportunity to sub in Philly, I knew what I needed to do to change in order to make Nitzan really happy, make Matt Vaughn really happy when I subbed with them. And I have been fortunate enough that they've asked me to come back and do some subbing. Unfortunately, the timing's never worked out, but it's different in the aspect that I know how to change and alter my ability of listening to appease the section, if you will.
Yeah. Okay. Christina.
Hi, my name is Christina Katz-Dougherty. I'm the tuba player in the group. I currently live in Louisville, Kentucky, and I have been an active freelancer throughout the country for the past year or so. I graduated from the Curtis Institute about a year ago with my diploma. And I've subbed with many orchestras around the country, including LA, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. Been very fortunate in that way. And I actually just won a job in the Phoenix Symphony. So very, very fun changes in my life, and have just had a wonderful time being in Seraph Brass.
And you play beautifully. All of you play beautifully. So, well, let's go ahead to how the group got started. Mary, you started the group about 9 years ago, I think. And why did you start it? And how did you start it?
Yes, we are in our ninth touring season. And so we started the group in summer of 2014. And it was an idea that I had been marinating for quite some time. I found an old notebook from 2006. I like to jot down notes. I'm an idea person, and I have to write them all down in different notebooks and just put the idea out there. And I wrote down in 2006 when I was at Yale that I wanted to start a brass quintet that was composed of all women. And then I put that in the notebook and didn't do anything, and began my professional life playing in Richmond Symphony, you know, primarily focusing on an orchestral career. And as I got a little bit older in my 20s, I felt that something was missing in my career. And I decided to just take, you know, a different turn and started establishing myself as a soloist, kind of a bit later than other soloists. But as my solo career started to pick up, then that gave me the confidence to start my own groups. I first started a nonprofit in Florida called Chrysalis Chamber Players, and that gave me the skill set to be able to feel confident to start Seraph Brass. And so I started the group with a friend of mine who I had met at Yale, and we had talked about the idea before as well. And we both were in a professional part of our lives where we felt like that we could do it. You know, you have to have a little bit of money to start the group, you know, and also organizational skills and really feel ready. And so we sought out the other three players to start the group, and we decided to do it in a way where, since we all live in a different part of the country, that we were just going to meet for a week, make a demo recording, do the photos, make the website, discuss programming, and just dive right in right off the bat, because I knew that we needed promotional materials to be able to sell the group so we could play more. And so that's how we started off our first year. And from there, we were able to book a lot of church concert series during our second year. And then during the third year, I had made a contact before the group started with David Follin, who he's in charge of this, one of the community concert series services called Allied Concert Services. And I had met him while touring with another group. And I told him this idea that I had, that I wanted to start this quintet. And he gave me his card and said, "You play great. I trust you. When you start the group, give me a call." And so I have him to thank for really trusting me to put a band together. And we, that year we did 60 to 70 concerts, and the two Rachels were part of that. And that really boosted us. And then from there, we were able to just keep building on each year from that.
So if we go back to that 1 week, that must have been a really intense week, I think, where you had put all those things together, a website, rehearsals, photos. How much money did you actually, so you said you had to have money to start out. Did you have to have a lot of money or just some to basically get you going? Or
I want to say, I mean, everybody covered their own travel. We all split the housing. We split the recording engineer cost. We did the website on our own. I'm just going based on my memory. I think it was about $1,000 a person. And, so we were each, you know, five equal people in the group at that point and, decided we're going to put the money down. We'll make it back. And then we met later that, spring to do a week workshop in Philly. And again, it was all out of our own pockets. We planned the concert, you know, we lost money doing it, but we were able to put ourselves out there on a stage and making that initial investment is 100% necessary. And you have to trust the process that you will book the work later on. And it's just, and I think that's why it makes sense that the group started when it did, when my co-founder and I were ready to be able to find other people who are also willing to put down the resources and the time to be able to start this group.
Mm-hmm. Was it really difficult to book concerts at the beginning?
The first year was just a planning year. And after that, it was not as hard as I thought because I had already been booking solo concerts for myself. So I was already trained myself to be my own manager in a way. And I was living in Naples, Florida, because my Dave used to play in Naples Philharmonic. And there's a lot of church concert series there. And I played at all those churches with my nonprofit that I had formed. And so all of those contacts booked Seraph. And so we did a handful of concerts in Florida. We also had contacts in Virginia. And so it was a lot of church concert series of just past contacts that I knew in Richmond, where I used to live as well with Rachel. And we just built on our personal connections to build that first year. And then the third year, 2016, that was the Allied Concert Services year. And then during that year, we have a couple managers we work with, and our one of them, his name is Reggie, and he's been working with us for a long time, and he'd been working with me as a soloist, and he started working for us and started booking things to complement the Allied concerts as well. So we've been working with him since 2016.
It seems to me like, do you know this concept of the flywheel from this book Good to Great by Jim Collins? He has each chapter illustrates a particular idea. And the idea of the flywheel is if you imagine this huge flywheel and you try and push on the flywheel and it's so heavy, you can hardly get it going. And after a little bit of time, it starts to move a little bit and you keep pushing, it moves a little bit more. And gradually, it takes on momentum of its own, and it reaches sort of like a point where you almost no longer have to push, or you don't have to push. And it sounds to me like that third year was when your flywheel really got moving with the Allied concerts. Is that correct, you think?
I think so. And we still have to work really diligently to keep booking concerts because, you know, with these community concert series, they're going more in a direction of booking popular acts in pop music. And so that's changed the scene of the classical music world in a lot of ways. We're still able to book a lot, but we still have to work very hard on planning our seasons. I do remember when we first formed the group, I wrote a list of dreams and goals. And one of them was to perform at the Lieksa Brass Week in Finland. And I was like, I'm going to write to Jouko Harjanne in 5 years. I'm going to write to him. And he reached out to us during our Allied tour in 2016 and wrote to me on Facebook and asked us to come. And so we'll have our third visit to Finland this summer. So that was like an interesting, like that, you know, like the flywheel makes sense because it's something that I dreamed of came much earlier. But that dream out there, I think, you know, it just helps the momentum.
So had you written to him before and so he actually contacted you first?
Yes, I had not even reached out to him. And I was like, whoa, this is really strange that this is happening. It's a great coincidence.
Wow, that's great. So how many of you are original members of the group then?
Just me.
Oh, okay.
But the Rachels have been in since they joined us on the Allied tour, because when we got this surprise, we have 60 to 70 dates. The original members couldn't do it. And my co-founder gave birth to twins. And so she couldn't tour that year and ended up resigning because it was just with the number of dates that we had, the group took on a direction that that I really wanted. I wanted to play as much as possible. And that means different things to different people. And so, you know, people's lives change, and that's normal in a brass quintet when you're touring, that, you know, the personnel does change. And so you have to find people that are wanting to be on the road and wanting to put in the time and be away from their families and make the group a priority. And but the two Rachels here, they were, you know, they feel like founding members because they did the Allied tours.
So Rachel and Rachel, why did you join? What was your reason for joining? What that was really inviting about the group?
Well, I had known Mary from 20 years. Yeah, and we were really close when we both lived in Richmond, Virginia together. And I remember seeing that she had started the group, and I was like, oh, I wanted that to be me. I want to be in it. And she reached out to me, and I was absolutely thrilled. And it's just kind of the rest is history, I suppose. but I wanted to join because I already knew that Mary was so fabulous and doing her own thing and was able to make a solo career work. And I just knew that this group was going to be successful because of her. So,
aww.
Well, I joined and I first met Mary in a place where I've met a lot of people, in a brass band gig. We were played in Athena Brass Band at the Gettysburg Brass Band Festival, of all places. And it just goes to show that to always try to make a good impression, because you never know. And for some reason, we hit it off and got along really well. She asked me if I'd ever be interested in subbing. And I said, sure, of course. And not thinking, you know, how that's nothing would come out of it, or if it did, it wouldn't be something life-changing, maybe, perhaps, but as it turned out to be. But she reached out later in the fall and asked me to sub later in the spring, and it just kind of I've always loved brass quintets, so I was really pleased. The group was at a high level already, so it was just a lot of fun. And it worked for me because as a college professor, you have to do a lot of outreach or professional development, you know, to fulfill the tenure track duties that one needs to do. So that was beneficial to me, but also beneficial as a musician. It's so gratifying and rewarding to work with musicians that are at such a high level. So it's been definitely a rewarding experience. And if I may, I had one quick thing. The best gig I ever had, Mary gave it to me, and it was playing with Adele. She just kind of asked me, hey, would you be interested in playing these concerts with the superstar Adele? And I was floored, but it was such a thrill, and it's just probably one of my career highlights for sure.
Wow. So she was really good, huh?
Oh, Adele?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. The whole experience, I think it was like 30,000 people screaming their heads off at you. So it was pretty cool.
Wow. That's great. That's great. Christina, when did you join the group?
I joined the group about a year ago, and that was off of an audition. So they had a big process of searching for players, and we had to send tapes and then do an interview. And then finally they brought a few of us out for live auditions. And I was just very fortunate that I gelled with the group. And for me, it was also just a dream. And just such a privilege to be able to work with a group of women like this.
Mm-hmm. And Vicky, you're the new kid on the block.
Well, not as new as Christina.
Yeah, I'm okay.
So I joined. It was interesting. I first heard of Seraph Brass mainly in 2019 when I got an email from Mary asking if I'd be interested in taking a trombone audition. I didn't know it at the time, but this was going to be Seraph Brass' first official audition into groups. Beforehand, people would play and people would formally join afterwards, but they had never held an audition process. However, COVID happened and that was put on pause for about a year and several months. And I figured, oh, well, you know, that's the end of it. You know, they're probably not going to hold an audition anymore. They're just probably going to continue things as they were. Then in April 2021, I was probably in the lowest part of my life playing wise, because we had now been through COVID for a year and 3 months. I've had no musical performances. It was the worst playing of my time because of my lifetime, because I wasn't practicing every day. I didn't have ambition. I didn't have any hopes. I didn't know when this cycle was going to end. I was very depressed. And then all of a sudden I get an email from Mary saying, Vicky, would you be able to come to Minot, North Dakota and play in a Seraph Brass show? And every fiber of my being said, you cannot play a brass quintet show in 7 days. And I said, yes. And I learned all of the brass music that I, as best as I possibly could in 7 days. I went from playing 0 hours a day to practicing freaking maybe 5 hours a day to get ready for the show every day, score studying the crap out of all this music. And I get to the gig, and I'm absolutely nervous. I don't know the caliber of players, but I know that they go on tour all the time. So I needed to make sure I like stepped up, and the only way I knew how, and that was to let my speaking play for itself. And apparently I hit it off with everybody. And then my audition actually happened a few months later in June. And I was officially announced as the core trombonist that following September, 2021. So I have been a part of that ever since. And Seraph really brought me out of not only the worst playing or the worst moments of my life, but it's now brought me to probably the best moments of my life, not only confidence-wise, but playing-wise as well. I have never been stronger. I can tell you I have chops of steel. Even if I'm dying, I know that no matter what, at the end of the day, the show must go on and I will find whatever lip I have left to play anything.
Wow, that's great. That's great. And if you say you're playing your best right now, that's pretty sensational because, as I mentioned, I've heard you with the Boston Symphony. You sounded great with the Boston Symphony, with the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra, which has a lot of trombone in it. I have a question, and I'm not sure how you would want to answer this, but starting out with a group at the beginning, let's say the first 3 or 4 years, as opposed to now being an all women's group, in terms of booking and in terms maybe of other things, but let's say booking, do you think that's an advantage or a disadvantage or just totally neutral?
I think there's an enticement to bring a minority group of players into a scene like that, you know, because it's not only showing that we're women players, but we're very skillful professional mm-hmm. players that happen to be women in dresses.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think we have to be maybe a little bit more careful with how we present ourselves than an all-male group might be. But I also think that the audiences are pretty floored when they see five women in sparkly gowns play really aggressive brass music.
How many managers do you have?
We have two, and we also are, you know, we can book things on our own as well. We're not exclusive with either manager, which is nice. They both have their own pockets of connections, and then we have our own pockets of connections. And so as a trifecta, I think that works really well with balancing out our season.
Do they actually focus on different areas, or not different areas of the country, but like one would work with orchestras and wind ensembles and the other would work on booking concerts just for the group alone, or how does that work?
You know, it's a hard to say. I think one of them focuses more on like the larger performing arts centers, and the other one has a lot of connections with like a lot of community concert series and churches, and they each have their own personal connections. So they haven't really like crossed, you know, there hasn't been a problem with like crossing directions yet, which is nice. They're both like understanding about like if that does happen, how do we manage it? But just having communication with both of them weekly helps make sure that doesn't happen. So it's been going well for a few years. So we'll continue that and see how it goes.
It seems like the group and some of you, at least individually, are really active on social media. How much do you think that helps?
I think it helps a lot. I mean, that is how I've mainly sculpted my solo career, because I was aged out of competitions. And so I just started sharing my playing on YouTube. And then once, you know, Facebook and Instagram became more popular, I started building audiences there. And so the Seraph audiences on Facebook I think we have 25,000 followers and 16,000 on Instagram. And we have been asked to do festivals through those platforms. I think we were asked to go to Spain on Instagram. And we went there last December for the Tubula Brass Week. And so these connections are really important. And so I'm very mindful of how what we share on social media, and, you know, the fans love to see the behind the scenes tour things when we're touring and all the fun stuff that happens or the chaos that happens. And plus, you know, showing our practice videos and our performance videos. I think it's important to show that we're human too, and not just like this perfectly polished products, but showing the human side too, I think helps draw audiences in as well. And then students also can learn from us too. So I think, you know, that presence is crucial for a chamber music group for sure.
And have you been doing that more and more? I mean, and it seems like a lot of you, or at least some of you, have your own individual sites too as well.
Yes, most of us do. I think all of us have. Some of us are more active than others. And I think that just as a collective also draws in new contacts, and we work as a team to, like, you know, reshare the stories and tag things and kind of stay up to date with all the trends that are happening, because they change all the time. There's, you know, new trends that you have to stay on top of that the young people like to do. And, I found that more and more concert series are, you know, having pages on Instagram and Facebook, and those have been great to follow and like and comment on their posts, so you can also build new connections around the world too. So
could you give me an example or two of trends? I'm not quite following what that would mean.
So one thing I was resistant to at first is this thing on Instagram called Reels. You know, before that it was always the horizontal video that you would share. And then all of a sudden Reels came out and the videos have to be vertical. I know at first I was like, I don't want to do this. This is not going to last, but it has lasted. And so now we make sure to film our concerts vertically, because they'll get more views when they're filmed vertically. I don't know why.
Really?
It's just algorithm is. And yeah, we try to, Christina is great at making, and Vicky too, making some real trends where you use, like, maybe you can talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain popular songs that people like to do, I don't know, like silly creative videos where you'll, you know, look all drab and then the music will change and then you look super glamorous and just silly things like that. I mean, it's unfortunately, you have to get people's attention in about 3 seconds. And if you don't, then no one's going to see your video. And so, we love posting playing videos, and in a lot of ways we wish that that's all we would do. But people really like to see the more fun trends. Actually, we have a video, on our Instagram page that got a lot of views of, it was just a picture, a bunch of pictures of us with our instruments when we were younger and kind of like in a silly, with silly music, and people just freak out for that stuff. So yeah.
And do you have like any feedback as to what kind of posts or videos get more of a response? Like, I've seen pictures of you in glamorous dresses and things like that. Does that get more of a response, or like a video of you playing something taken from a concert, for example?
I think the ones I've seen get the most attention are ones that are like up close and personal of the playing. Like I just posted something of myself practicing a serif solo on my G trumpet, and this aria that I play with the group, and people just like to see the up close, like, oh, how does she play that? What kind of trumpet is that? Mm-hmm. Or Vicky was playing her solo feature, and having the camera right there so you can see her slide technique and everything. I think people love the up close and personal, as well as the concert clips as well. But people love to see us practicing like up close. Mm-hmm. I find that.
And you said you had, I think, 25,000 on, was that YouTube or Facebook?
On Facebook.
How do you get that many people? I mean, you just post things and gradually more and more people come on board.
Yes. And we make sure to tag the concert series and we're Yamaha artists, and we tag that. We just tag everyone that's involved in the situation that we're in. And we also build off our own solo pages as well. My following for myself on Facebook, I have 60,000 followers on Facebook, my solo page, and on Instagram, almost 40,000. And so every time I tag a Serif thing or Serif tags me, people follow both pages. And that happens with the ladies too. You know, we all continue to share and tag the group. It just brings in, you know, cross followers. You know, if someone's a fan of Rachel on Horn and she tags a Serif post, then that brings that person to follow the Serif page. And so we just make sure to connect all the posts with everybody who's involved in the concert that we're putting on or any educational service that we're doing, that, like, you know, you just connect all the audiences together in the post.
One person that I just interviewed fairly recently was Anne Majette, who for 11 years was the critic of the Washington Post. And one of the questions that I asked her was if she thought it was possible to have a career just through social media. And because it seems like the really big careers are, you have to have a major agent, you know, to have a huge career, like a Lang Lang or Yuja Wang or somebody like that. And I guess it is possible, but then you have to sustain it over a long period of time. So that's really interesting to me because I'm terrible at that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to learn more about it and get inspired. So that is, for me, very inspiring to hear. Do you ever get pushback against some of the videos that you post or pictures that you post? Like, why are you doing that or not?
You might get some inappropriate comments. I like to delete them personally, because if I ever interact with someone like that, they're usually a troll and they want to fight and they push back and things. So sometimes I will be like, I'm going to fight this troll. And then it's always annoying because they won't stop writing and then I have to block them. So I mean, that's just my personal experience. My husband's always like, don't feed the troll. It's going to be so annoying. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's just, I personally would rather not focus on that, but I do fall for the trap every once in a while.
Vicky, I think you raised your hand maybe.
So what's really good about, if you have a really good social media presence, and I'm very active on my social media stories, people know exactly what they're getting into when they meet me. I'm very black and white. You're gonna see all versions of me on my Instagram. And there was one time that I posted a photo back in April, innocent photo, just having a good time. We were in Florida. I was soaking up the sun, and I'm not gonna say the first part of what this person said, but it was inappropriate. And then the second half of that comment was, "But can she play?" And I didn't know this because I was driving to our next concert location, but my friend, my colleague, Rachel, she goes, "Do you know this guy?" And I was like, "What's going on?" And before I knew it, because people can see who I am and what I'm about on social media so clearly, so many people that I didn't know came out of the woodwork to come defend me, and hunted this person down and contacted every and all organizations this person was connected to.
Wow.
And this person has been absolutely ostracized from any orchestra or ensemble he's been playing with in Canada. And these people made sure that these music directors, people that he formerly worked with, were like, "We want to make sure that, please let this person know, Victoria, know that we are completely so apologetic for the actions of this person who was used to be affiliated with us. And we are going to be contacting this person to make sure that they have absolutely no affiliation with our orchestra or our work experience." So what's amazing is that I have been very fortunate that I don't have a lot of trolls like Mary. As Toby Off says, if no one's trolling you, then you don't make it in life. But
Well, I don't have much of a social media presence and nobody's trolling me, so I'm a failure.
So Toby told me that. I'm like, "Oh, I don't have any trolls." He goes, "Yeah, because you didn't make it." And and he's always teasing with me like that. But the reality is that people know my personality through social media so well that when someone had something so negative to say about me, so many people came out of the woodwork to defend who I was without me asking to do that. And I think that's the beauty behind social media that I've been able to experience, that came from a negative situation.
You called the guy too.
I called him. I called him as well.
Wow. That's an amazing story. So what did you say and what did he say? Or I assume it was a he.
It was a he, obviously. I pretended to be a news reporter and asked him why did he feel it was important to say that on a Facebook post, and then he was like, "Oh well, does she really play like that?" And was really trying to defend himself. And I gave him opportunities to apologize, and he didn't want to apologize. And so I ended the meeting. "Actually, sir, you are speaking with Victoria Garcia." And all of a sudden, you just hear a 5-second pause, and he goes, "I'm so sorry." It was about a 20-minute phone call.
Wow. I had no idea I'd be getting that kind of a response to my question, which was a pretty spontaneous question. And that's a great story. That's an incredible story. So somehow I'm going to have to find a way to get trolled. So you've given me inspiration now. Another aspect of Seraph Brass is that they give workshops on entrepreneurship. And so we discuss that aspect of their creative life. And since they are a touring ensemble, we talk about life on the road and end up by talking about group commissions.